Comics.
Movies.
Music.
Video games.
Technology.
Blu-ray.
Television.
This is the HHWLOD Podcast Network.
Now recording, and this is Out Now with Aaron and Abe. I am Aaron, and Abe is not here, but Out Now is normally a movie podcast, which is Abe and I discussing new movies weekly. Every now and then, though, we do these special bonus episodes such as this one. This is going to be another one of our special commentary episodes for a horror movie. What horror movie, you ask? Well, I had to ask the listeners over on Facebook, facebook.com/outnowpodcast, what horror movie we should do for a commentary before realizing how obvious the answer actually is. Halloween's coming up. Why not do a commentary for the film Halloween from director John Carpenter? I love this movie. I've gotten some other people that I believe love this movie quite a bit as well. And I figured, let's do this. Let's do a special commentary episode for Halloween. If you're tired of listening to John Carpenter or Jamie Lee Curtis yak about it on their commentary, that's more expertly crafted than ours will be, then come here and you've come to the right place. So, with that said, joining me to discuss Halloween, we have, from the Naptown Nerd and whysoblue.com, from coming to you live from Smith's Grove Sanitarium, Brandon Peters.
You don't know what death is.
And from other shows at the HHWLOD Podcast Network, including the Walking Dead TV podcast, we have from across the street from the Myers Place in Haddonfield, Jim Dietz.
But you only see my arm in this shot.
How are you guys doing?
Terrific.
Loving it.
Awesome. No real notes to go over here. You guys that listen to these commentaries, or people that are just like, hey, what's these commentaries like watching it for the first time? All you really need to know is that you could, if you're playing this episode and just being like, hey, I want to listen to this, great for you. But if you do, in fact, want to watch the film Halloween while listening to us schmucks yak about it for an hour and a half, you need to sync that movie up right now. So by doing that, you have to pop in whatever copy you have. My copy is the new Blu-ray release, which Brandon reviewed on Weiss of Blue and is quite excellent, both the review and the Blu-ray. It is on this Blu-ray. I have it paused at 7 seconds in. This is basically, so the movie starts, you hear a little bit of the score, the iconic score, and the company logo, a Compass International Pictures release, pops up on screen. That is where I have it paused right now. I believe you gentlemen have it paused there as well.
Yes.
I'm good to go to Haddonfield.
Okay, so I'm going to count down from 3, 2, 1, go, and we're going to press play, and we're all going to go and start talking about the movie. So, in case you stumbled onto this commentary, that's what you're in for right now. So here we go. I'm going to count it down. 3, 2, 1, go. Okay. So I got it going on mine. You guys going as well?
I'm going.
I see about
Mustafa Akkad.
Akkad.
So here we go. Quick thoughts on Halloween. I like it quite a bit. Brandon, go.
Favorite movie of all time.
Like, straight up favorite movie.
Straight up. Like, if I have to pick the one that influenced me the most with my life and film and stuff, it's this one. I mean, I of course am like everyone else, and Star Wars was huge for me, and Tim Burton's Batman was a big one for me, but this one really, I mean, it had was quite the experience the first time I watched it. A level of intensity I'd not had before really affected me, and then I also, in turn, wanted to know everything about this movie, and I started learning about the people behind it, and then learning that it was like such a small production that felt like, you know, like, oh man, I you know, movies are possible for, like, you know, Joe Schmo like me to make. These people did this for like nothing, and everybody was helping with, you know, everything. Like Jamie Lee Curtis was doing, you know, she wasn't just the star of the movie, she was also raking up leaves, bagging them, you know, painting. carving pumpkins, stuff like that. I mean, helping out everywhere just was like a really cool vibe and experience and stuff I wanted to be a part of. And, you know, learned so much about film and stuff from this movie and this series.
Jim?
Halloween was my first, the first movie that ever really scared me. I just wrote all about this actually in a blog that's on Brandon's site about Halloween. The first time I saw it, it was as a midnight movie. I was about 12 years old, and at that point, horror movies to me were like Hammer horror movies or Roger Corman, Edgar Allan Poe movies I'd seen on Saturday afternoons. And Halloween was the first movie I saw that was a horror movie that brought it to street level, that brought it to, you know, it wasn't off in Europe somewhere in the distant past. It was a street that looked like my street and a school that looked like my school. And that's what really, like, sold the horror in this movie for me, because I was living in that kind of suburbia when this movie came out. It just really struck a chord with me and made me realize that horror movies could be a lot more than, Christopher Lee and Peter Cushing outwitting each other in a Hammer movie or something. You know, horror movies could actually, it was the first movie that actually, like, scared me enough that on the way home from seeing it, I was, you know, still affected by it. And that was the first time I really became a fan of horror movies and understood, you know, why people are such big fans of the genre.
Yeah. It's amazing that, you know, for me too, Jim, like, it's, you know, looks like, you know, where I'm growing up and home, but this is Pasadena, and they did a heck of a job relating it to, like, the Midwest, yeah, like it's supposed to be. I mean, aside for some hills in the background of a shot and the California license and the California license plates,
yeah.
But I mean, it really looks genuine, and that probably has to do with the low budget.
Well, yeah, I mean, they had to keep it street level out of budget concerns, but I think it so much helps the film rather than hinders it. I mean, I couldn't imagine this movie being as effective as it was when I saw it for the first time if it had been like a quote-unquote Hollywood production and had a lot more money behind it and, you know, weren't shot on location somewhere in the Midwest or what have you. It wouldn't have improved the movie one whit.
Where was the Rob Zombie movie shot, if you know offhand?
It was the same. They kept it around the same streets.
Cool. This opening sequence, by the way, this is like one of my all-time favorite opening sequences in any movie. I remember when I very first saw this, it just spooked the hell out of me because you're seeing the whole thing from Michael's point of view, and then the reveal at the end is just so well realized. And this whole sequence, I mean, they're putting you in the boots of the killer, you know? They're putting you in the, you know, I mean, and you can't help but watch and be fascinated. And it's just, it was the first time I'd ever really seen, like, first-person perspective used like this in a movie to that effect. I mean, it really got to me, you know. It really, I remember it to this day. It's why it's one of my favorite opening scenes of all time in any movie. So.
Even that early reveal where you just see a child's hand pop in suddenly, which I think is what Deborah Hill's hand.
Deborah Hill's hand, yeah.
But you see, you know, obviously it's a young hand as opposed to, you know, some old man hand or something like that. So, like, it suddenly shifts your perspective on what's actually going on. And then he grabs a knife and it's like, whoa, what is going on with this kind of scene?
Well, this is such a diligent sequence, too. If the camera moves any bit to the left, you see crew members, you see just, or to the right, it's all, you know, the magic is gone because there's people constantly shifting throughout this house, running back and forth, making sure everything goes right. And they only did up, this house was actually, it was abandoned, and they only, this was the last days of shooting here, and they only did up as much as would be likely seen shot with the camera. So there's just like the room to the left is barren and empty, and like if they lift the camera up at certain spots, you just see nothing. Like they painted what they had to, they put furniture only where it would be necessary.
Is that the first cut when he puts on the mask?
Yes. And then there's another cut here,
he runs down
and turns to the knife. Yeah.
Oh, and it turns to the knife, and then when he runs down the stairs.
After he's done stabbing her.
There's three cuts in this whole scene, right?
Yeah, but forever they let it, people lay to believe it was the longest shot, continuous city cam shot in film history. It wasn't until, I think, the late 90s where they finally, you know, said, okay, yeah, we did make cuts.
It took even, like, Alfonso Cuarón a while to admit that some of those scenes weren't done in one day.
Yeah.
Spoilers, guys.
it was a record hold, like it was in record books, it seemed, like talking about how long the shot was and everything else. And
what about like Rope?
Still working on that list, huh?
Yeah.
I just, this tracking shot through the kitchen, I mean, it just, I don't know, seeing this, I mean, I saw it when I was like 11 or 12 or something. It just really affected me. I never really seen this device used in film before because, you know, I was 11 or 12. And then, you know, seeing it used to this effect, it just like I said, it just really stuck with me. It's one of those scenes you never forget.
Great reveal, just the way it shot. I mean, we haven't even talked about Carpenter's music in this movie yet, but oh, it's so iconic and just sets such a great tone for everything that happens and just the way it enhances every scene of this movie is wonderful.
Yeah, this movie wasn't working without the music track. They were showing it before and people weren't liking it at all. And once he added the music, it became, you know, it came alive, I guess.
I love that he does his own soundtracks. And I would just want to say on the record that John Carpenter's soundtracks are some of the best driving music you'll ever have.
Oh, yeah.
Seriously, like the Escape from New York soundtrack, this soundtrack, even the Escape from L.A. soundtrack, parts of that he did.
They Live.
Good driving music.
Get some harmonica going.
they actually, when they were filming, when they did Planet Terror, they tried to commission Carpenter to do the score for that, but he turned them down.
And it's like, come on, Robert Rodriguez, you do your scores anyway. What are you doing? Come on. How old is Michael supposed to be now in 1978?
1978, I think he's 21.
Like, that makes sense to me, right? He's like 21. It's like a pivotal age or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Goes, returns to, like, finally he takes his chance. I don't know if Halloween, the Curse of Michael Myers backs this up, if anything. But...
Well, he's... Yeah, they go back on a lot of things in that. But he's actually, every time, you know, he's come back in later years, I think his age has been appropriate where it's you know, he's not in a walk. He shouldn't be in a walker, you know?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Because by the time you get to H2O, I mean, he's 41, he could still do quite damage. I mean, if James Bond is wandering around at those ages, then Michael Myers is perfectly apt to kill teens.
I like H2O. It's a solid movie.
It is a solid film. It takes it back. I don't think it holds up quite as well, but I think it finishes very strong. The end sequence of that movie is what seals it.
Yeah, that's why I hate Resurrection.
we don't. Let's just not talk about that movie
Busta
at
Rhymes.
All.
H2O. It has that one scene where a guy sticks his hand in a garbage disposal and doesn't get it mangled up, which is kind of a loss on sticking your hand in a garbage disposal. But besides that,
I think he gets his throat ripped open with it, though.
Yeah.
I really like this part with the eye holes of the masks, too. The mask, you know, scanning the room, stuff like that. It just really even brings the first person thing home even further. Just sneaks up on his sister.
Now we have the "Why are the patients wandering around?" sequence.
This always creeped me out. The car lights and not being able to sure what you see, and you see all these people in white robes walking around. It's just freaky.
Like they were gonna. Yep, there we go. Gonna get Michael in there.
Here comes the first jump scare.
Michael's now grabbing the nurse, getting to his car because he can drive, apparently.
It's Marion Crane, who appears in this 2 and H2O.
Oh, okay.
She's
same character.
In this one, she just appears to be a nurse, but apparently she's, I don't know, maybe government agent or something when she appears in the second one. And then she's the opening kill in H2O. Spoiler alert.
Because he uses her to find Michael, right? Or to find
Yeah, she apparently took care of Dr. Loomis after 2. And H2O, which none of it has Haddonfield in there. Starts out in Langdon, Illinois, and moves out to Summer Glen, California.
Langdon, of course, the popular suburb of Haddonfield.
There's these little towns that, you know, if you watch these movies, you kind of feel like involved in the city. There's like Russellville they talk about, and Pontiac, and There's, you know, Langdon, of course.
Like it's like a DC universe of its own. It has.
Yeah, they. I mean, really, the movies do a really good job of making Haddonfield feel like a real place, even the poorer movies. This just with general conversation, stuff that they don't have to have in there, but it just feels kind of genuine.
It's why I like the Halloween series. I mean, now we were talking about this kind of off record, but I like the Halloween series more than the Friday series, more than the Nightmare on Elm Street series. Maybe because I like the continuity involved in, even though kind of.
It has a
weird kind of like H2O ditches 3, 4, 5, 6, but then like 4, 4, and 5, and 6 try to like set up its own weird kind of trilogy.
Yeah,
it's a neat approach, I guess. It just kind of its attempts to respect its franchise impress me.
Yeah. When it goes too far, it just stops. It's just. Starts all over again.
What, Jim?
I was just going to say, I always liked him more. It just seemed Michael Myers seemed more plausible to me than Jason. I mean, Jason is pretty much immortal, you know. Michael Myers, I mean, seemed more believable in a weird way than Jason or Freddy. I think that's why I enjoyed the franchise more.
Something about this is something we could explore for days, but just the mystique of the Myers character is inherently scary to me, whereas Jason just seems silly for whatever reason to me.
Well, Jason, I mean, you have to go to Jason. I mean, Michael comes to your house. Like, Jason, well, you got to go all the way out to Crystal Lake, and you got to mess with his woods. And
it's always hard to book a date.
Yes. And I mean, Jason essentially wasn't the immortal self he was until, like, the sixth film. I mean, he was technically kind of human through 2, 3, and 4, but
technically human.
Technically, I mean, but
anyway, you know. here's Boo Radley's tree and the Myers house, which looks wonderfully scary. It has this great kind of. It's obviously kind of dilapidated. You get this great sense of character from just this building, and that's I always like that appreciate about this house.
I have to make a comment and praise this Blu-ray once more with the new color timing is just fantastic. The sky and the look and the feel and the coldness just makes it feel like Halloween time and fall even more.
And of course, we have the introduction of Laurie with Jamie Lee Curtis. Backup, actually. Michael Myers just that's another thing I love about it. Michael Myers just stands. He just appears in places. He's not he doesn't make much bones about it. He's quietly stalking somebody from a distance out in the daylight, just putting it out there.
So I mean, this whole movie is predicated on like, when is he going to do something? I know he's going to do something. When is he going to do it? And it sets it up so well because I mean, you have him sitting and stalking, and then in the meantime, you have Dr. Loomis just talking about how bad he is, and he just keeps building it up and building it up and building it up. Like, he's the reason, Dr. Loomis is almost as much a reason you're scared of Michael as, you know, watching him sit and stalk these girls.
For sure.
And poor Donald Pleasance finally got a role he could put some teeth into in this. I mean, he was kind of floundering around in TV movies and really bad European films. I mean, a few of them ended up on Mystery Science Theater, like Puma Man, and I'm thinking of, and Warrior of the Lost World. But he really does, like you say, Brandon, set up the why Michael is so scary. He's the only one who really like sees the real terror.
Yeah, the only two that see it are him and Tommy Doyle, the little boy. You get a deranged old man and a young kid.
He's like Sheriff Brody at the beach in Jaws, you know.
Yeah.
He's trying to warn everybody, but no one will listen.
I mean, he was in The Great Escape.
Oh, I know he was in it. I'm just saying, by this time in the 70s, he'd kind of
fallen
on leaner times as Star was on the wane, as it were.
So. Now this is terrifying.
He's a good actor. He's a really good actor.
The Michael just standing, watching her at school. What's even more terrifying is, like, there's no reason he should know what, like, class he should be at that time. He just knows. That's scary. Guy staring at you outside a window.
Yeah, you still know. I want to point out that the scene before this where Loomis was with the Dr. Wynn there was almost the entire basis for Halloween 6, The Curse of Michael Myers.
Yeah.
Just... that one scene right there where you have Dr. Nguyen, who ends up getting played by Mitch Ryan in that later entry, and Loomis saying, or he's like, he couldn't have drive here, didn't know how. He's like, he was doing very well last night. Maybe someone here taught him lessons. And that's part of where Daniel Farren's got his, aha, I'm going to tie this all together idea for
it's all about Michael's Christmas. Driving lessons?
It was all about Michael's driving lessons. Wow. And here's Tommy Doyle, who would later grow up to be Paul Rudd.
Paul Stephen Rudd.
I just
watched Halloween Curse of Michael Myers because it's unfortunately the only one available on Netflix the other night. Instant watch. I forgot Donald Pleasance was in THX.
Yeah, I mean he's a great actor. It just by this time, you know, he wasn't as in demand. So it was cool that he could be in this low budget of a movie at this time. You know, considering he, like you said, Great Escape and all these other great movies he had been in. But he really sells it, I think. He really sells the fear of Michael. To me, anyway, he did for when I saw it.
That's a great first time, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
Where he jumps out of the kid that knocked over Tommy.
Well, I think Donald Pleasance was only there for like 3 days, too. That's all they had him for. And they wanted Christopher Lee, but that didn't work out.
Well, I think they were. Christopher Lee would almost be too imposing to be.
Christopher Lee has said he's always regretted it, turning down the role, and then he thought his next opportunity to get something similar is when they offered him The Howling. He jumped on that because he passed on Halloween and wished he would have done it.
We all cherish The Howling to this day.
The Howling too.
That your sister is a werewolf.
That's a great long shot, again.
Yeah.
Just falling after Tommy. Dean Cundey's cinematography.
Amazing. Shot my childhood.
Yeah.
He did Raiders. I mean, like, all three great Indiana Jones movies. It's just great. Oh, my God. This whole sequence is just eerie. Well done. Low-budget movie.
Very, very street level, very, very eye level. Like most of the shots are mid shots at eye level. Nothing extravagant or fancy. It just keeps everything on a smaller scale, and I think that really plays to the movie's strengths.
There's your hills that don't exist in the Midwest.
Oh, those.
Yeah.
You haven't seen those before. I've seen those hills. Where have you been? That's like Footloose has like mountains in it. It's supposed to take place in like outside of Chicago or something like that.
Yeah, this is the infamous Rabbit in Red matchbook comes from here.
How many cars did Michael take to get to Haddonfield?
Well, he didn't take this one. He just got the clothes from the guy. He's still got the Smith Grove car.
Okay. What am I thinking? How do you think he convinced this guy to? What do you think he did in order to get this done?
He could have acted like his car was. It's a garage car, so.
I guess I'm picturing Michael like standing on the side of a road in a hospital gown, like thumbing somebody over to get them to stop, not saying anything, just quietly staring at them.
That role would be played in the remake by Ken Foray as Big Joe Grizzly.
Yeah. So now we get PJ Souls.
Oh yeah, she was like a big get for this movie. She was one of the better names because she was coming off of Carrie.
I just watched the original Carrie the other night too. So.
Yeah, I just popped that one in a couple days ago myself.
She's dressed like Mario in most of that movie.
Yeah.
She was also, she was also in Rock and Roll High School and Stripes.
Yep.
With Sean Young, actually, the other female lead in that one.
Completely sane Sean Young and Stripes.
Yeah.
And, of course, we get Annie as well. What's her name? Nancy Loomis? That's not even a real name, though, isn't it? So much typing.
Sorry. Now this, I really love this establishing of the girls. They feel genuine. They feel real. They each have their own little quirky personality.
Who am I thinking of? It's another D name then for cinematographer on Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Gene Cundy did shoot. He shot Back to the Future.
Who am I thinking of on Raiders?
Zemeckis. And,
that is a big car.
He did work with Spielberg on Jurassic Park.
Douglas Slocum. There we go. I knew it was a D name. Okay. Get my cinematographer straight. Because that matters.
He kills. And I always thought it was funny when, just, when Linda goes, is that Devon Graham? Yeah. I thought it was Michael Myers.
I like that Michael has supersonic hearing. Windows up, driving away.
She yells at him. Well, the one window's broken. Remember he smashed the window the night before.
Fair enough.
I know this movie up and down.
No doubt, man. I love how they establish, like, you know, Jamie Lee has the two sweaters on, so you know, and the big pile of books, because, you know, she's a good girl. And then PJ Souls has a cigarette, so you know she's the bad girl.
Douglas Slocum's 100 years old. Way off topic, but I'm just saying.
God bless him. 100 years old. This also really spawned my love of Carpenter over the years. I mean, this, The Fog, Escape from New York, all of his 80s movies, They Live.
The Thing.
The Thing, yeah. Just
from Halloween to They Live, he was on just a roll.
Yeah, good stuff all around.
I mean, it took him a while to reach his masterpiece, which I always have said is John Carpenter's Vampires. But girls are still walking home.
Still walking. And the streets do switch from being wet to dry.
I do like the kind of shaky steady cam that's following them. It's not just, you know, it's not on tracks or whatever. It's just actually handheld. Yeah. It's nice. Nice effect. I mean, it's something they would do digitally now, probably, I guess. But
what's the last great Carpenter movie? Be in the Mouth of Madness, maybe?
Yeah. That's what's generally considered.
It's not Village of the Damned.
No.
It's not Ghosts of Mars.
It's not The Ward. That's just the last one. This is so great. And coming up here is a classic moment where you can see John Carpenter's cigarette smoke go across the screen.
Oh, really?
Let me see. Yeah. When she comes through the bush and sees nothing and she goes back to talk to Laurie, you can see a little stream of smoke. It's just John Carpenter's cigarette.
That's kind of scary, too, right there. Because, like, ideally, he's standing right there. It's like
it's got the close on it. Ah, come on here. One, two.
There it is. I saw it.
Yep. There you go.
No, that's just atmosphere. That's just, yeah. it's just physical atmosphere. Yeah, really. Jeez, The Fog, Escape from New York, Christine, Starman, Big Trouble, Prince of Darkness, They Live.
All solid. Although I remember a lot of people not liking Prince of Darkness when it came out, but I loved it.
I really like that one. I think it's even better now.
Actually, yeah, I'd agree with that. I think it kind of fits some social. It certainly campy, though. You can't, like, watch that movie.
Oh, yeah. It's campy. It's camp with some creep, too.
Yeah. Because for every creepy scene, there's, like, Alice Cooper stalking around or, like, a guy doing kung fu moves to get through a door or something.
You know, he got that, but he got that part just because, like, of a set visit. Like, Carpenter decided to put him in a... Like, he decided to make, like, a ringleader for the homeless people when Alice Cooper just was, like, a fan of Carpenter, had met him at a show or something. Mm-hmm. And Carpenter's like... And he's like, can I come down to the set and see what you're shooting? He's like, yeah, sure. And then he was just sitting, hanging out. And he's like, you want to be in this? And he's like, yeah. And then he's like, well, we'll shoot one little quick shot. And he's like, hey, do you want to be like the ringleader of the homeless? And he wound up getting the part he had.
Now we got Chuck Cyphers.
And there's Chuck Cyphers, who's a Carpenter regular.
Assault on Precinct 13. There's a commentary we should do.
There we go.
Yeah.
I have to review it for next month. So,
most Carpenter movies actually are pretty fitting for a commentary. They're just they sit right in that sweet spot where it's fun to talk over them.
Yeah, the way you are with this movie, Brendan, I am with Escape from New York. I love that movie.
I do. I've
probably seen it like 100 times, unfortunately, you know, which is sad because I could have spent that time like getting a PhD or something. But I will always have a soft spot in my heart for that movie.
See, I'm the thing. Is my Carpenter movie?
That's a lot of people.
That's an awesome movie. That's definitely my second. Hi, how you doing? I'm looking at your laundry. Oh, now I'm gone.
that Kurt Russell relationship, just great.
Oh yeah.
If anyone's ever, again, scary, just guy standing. Anyone, and that one might even not be real. That one just might be Laurie, right? You'd have to think that, right? I don't know. I mean, she stared at it the entire time. It's not like she turned away. Like,
that's a scene they paid homage to with Paranorman.
Paranorman. Just great work of homages to other movies. But, I mean, think about that scene. Like, Laurie's staring there. It's not like she turned away in class and, like, he was reasonably gone. I think she's just been seeing him so much the entire day at that point that it's just looming in the back of her mind.
She's a big fan of James Ensor.
Who isn't? I have that same poster on my wall in front of me right now.
Oh yeah.
I have a mirrored one.
Do you have
too.
A Raggedy Ann and a jewelry box under it?
And a black globe.
No, my scary clown sucked those into my closet. But I mean the James Ensor one. I have a mirrored version where it's just that same pose but him facing the other way, so it's two Ensors back to back looking at each other. It's great. Oh my god. Can't believe you guys don't have that.
one of the television scenes that they added I really like with the edited one with Lori and Annie and Linda, where Linda comes over to try to borrow a blouse from Lori, and then Annie calls to try to borrow, like, I think the same blouse or something like that. But it's just really fun giving them more moments and a much richer friendship with the three of them.
It's a fun scene. Yeah, I know what you mean. Are the kids that are trick-or-treating that we saw earlier, is that because Carpenter couldn't shoot at night? Or no, he does shoot at night, though, with kids trick-or-treating.
He does shoot at night, trick-or-treating.
Maybe it's just kids out early. Yeah. I know, like, because I mentioned that because I know, like, Freaks and Geeks, the short-lived but very wonderful TV series that's on Netflix Watch Instant, like, they had a Halloween episode where all the kids had to trick-or-treat during the day because they couldn't shoot at night.
Yeah. I mean, kids go out, like, nowadays, man. It's like...
Oh, yeah.
Driving home from work and the kids are out trick-or-treating and they're done before the sun goes down.
Yeah, I speed up. I'm sorry, that's not, I don't know where that came from. Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah, people, you know, take the younger ones out earlier.
I love these big 70s cars.
Oh,
and,
love it.
And pumpkins.
Mm-hmm.
Here comes the song people don't usually think to associate with the movie, but Blue Oyster Cult, Don't Fear the Reaper.
Oh yeah.
Playing in the car. Carpenter was a fan.
That and Mr. Sandman are my Halloween songs.
Oh, you don't what about Creed? What's This Life For?
West?
No dice.
Only as an Ipecac.
Or Brother Kane, Fool Shine On.
Better. That scene where Laurie's just waiting, was just lying on the bed and just kind of letting time pass, that reminds me of that scene. But my favorite stretch of Scream is the one where Neve Campbell's kind of waiting around at night, and like Rose McGowan calls her at some point, and then she gets the call from from Ghostface, and it's just kind of I always feel like that scene pays homage to that scene and this scene in Halloween where Laurie's just kind of waiting around for things to get going. It's just kind of laid back sequence, friends talking to each other with looming threat on the horizon.
Well, it's also an early attack that you don't see coming in Scream.
Exactly, yeah.
And with the opening kill being, you know, Drew Barrymore, who at the time, it's now in pop culture that she's the opening victim, but at the time you thought she was just a regular part of the movie, and after she went, anybody was game.
I love this scene with this guy who's telling this horrible story, and then he gets cut off. it's a great bit.
There are people, there are hardcore fans that believe that this Charlie Bowles that he talks about, grabbed a hacksaw and all that, was cursed with a thorn as well, just like Michael Myers in Halloween 6. The Paul Rudd adventure.
Yeah, that's what I subtitled.
Michael's very strong. He can lift a tombstone on his own.
Now it's Cheech and Chong's Up in Smoke.
There it is.
Lori and Annie.
Oh, Rick Rosenthal returned for Halloween Resurrection?
Yes, and it proved that Carpenter did have a big hand in Halloween 2's success. Rick, which you know, Jim, you pointed out in your the first article you wrote for me, the Halloween 3 one, that Tommy Lee Wallace ended up doing a lot of TV, and most of the Halloween directors spent most of their time in TV. Dwight Little, Joe Chappelle, and Rick Rosenthal, of course, did a lot of TV as well. Rick Rosenthal, who directed Halloween 2 and Resurrection, did a lot of Smallville episodes and plenty of TV through his career.
I love that Michael's chasing them in the car, or just driving behind them in the car right now. Another one of the subtler ones, but you kind of, you realize, like, oh, yeah, he's doing that.
Hey, our car reeks of pot. Let's drive up to these cops.
I
hey,
love
you want some weed?
Their logic. Just be natural. He won't know.
No.
There is no possible way he could detect that we're high right now because we're acting natural.
We had the windows rolled up and everything.
Nice high smile from a Curtis.
See, from this point in the movie where Annie picks up Lori, it's just as much her movie as it is Lori's once, you know, they're together and they split up and go babysitting. If not, even more so. She's doing more interesting things. She's got more dialogue. So I could, you know, Graham, we have those, we've established Lori in two scenes early on that we're going to be following her, but you could, I mean, back in the day without knowledge of who Jamie Lee Curtis is and the star she would become, you could easily think that maybe Annie's the main character.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, her father's heavily involved in everything. Well, I mean, Loomis is like the main character, but yeah, it's like.
Well, here's it.
There's Michael in the back.
Right? Yeah, here's an interesting shot. When this was on VHS and growing up, you couldn't see him there.
Huh.
It was cropped, and this car passed in the background, and you didn't even notice it was Michael. And when I first saw this in Letterboxd, I was like, "Oh my gosh, Michael just drove behind him." But that was cropped.
You think seeing that Michael would know Mike? But with that shot establishing the only real time they meet each other until like the end, you think that's Michael acknowledging that Loomis is in town, also looking for him? Doesn't really matter. You don't really get in the side of the head of Michael Myers, but
yeah,
hey, it's J.J. Abrams lens flare.
Yeah. There you go. It's distracting you from the palm trees.
And with one turn here, it will become pitch black night.
The sun goes down quick in Haddonfield. That's one of the things people don't really realize about it, is the mountains, obviously, that surround Haddonfield. It makes it this hotbed for night, obviously. I'm looking at the poster for H2O, and it reminds me of Dimension's habit of putting what they think are the most popular stars in order on their posters. So you have Jamie Lee Curtis, then Michelle Williams, then LL Cool J, then Jodie Lynn O'Keefe, who you obviously know just by me saying that name, And then Josh Hartnett, because that was his first movie, I believe, right?
Yes. He's going to be a big deal for a stretch of 12 years.
That's why Scream's hilarious, because it's like, what's her name? Drew Barrymore is on top, then like Neve Campbell and popular actor Skeet Ulrich.
Wow, it does get dark in Haddonfield, doesn't it?
I don't know. Maybe they just drove around a lot longer, and they, the lost deleted scenes of them driving until it got completely dark.
Time does get away from you when you're smoking the wacky weed. That's for sure.
Brandon, but, maybe you should just look up the lost scenes of Halloween.
The lost scenes of Halloween. Yeah. You know, it's funny. Michael will later take this car and drive it back to his house, and then return back here to stalk the girls.
He's a big fan of cleaning up evidence.
Yeah.
And it's not a far walk, you know. I mean, if you're about to, embark on a night of slaughter, you want to get your blood going, right? So you want to, like, have a nice, maybe even jogged. I don't know. He's a young guy. Maybe he jogged over.
Well, I like how they give us his look, but they don't. We don't get very long shots. We don't get clear shots. If we see his face, it's from a big distance.
Yeah, the best reveal, I guess, is probably when he kills Annie, when you really get a full-on shot of the mask.
Yeah, well, it's through a fogged-up car window, too.
True,
so it's not really. But the way they shoot Michael, I mean, like, as I mentioned in my White Soap Blue review, it just is, like, so Strangers on a Train. I know they talk how Psycho, was the grandfather of all this, but, I mean, this movie reminds me more of Strangers on a Train aesthetically than it does Psycho.
When you wrote about that, I was completely on board with that. I know exactly, because Strangers on a Train is one of my favorite movies, and it one of my favorite Hitchcock movies for sure, at least. And that's one where the second I read that, it just clicked for me completely. I was like, this does have a lot of that imagery in there, just the way shots are constructed and things. It really, I mean, obviously Carpenter's a a Hitchcock fan, but like that one, I could completely see how that one weighs in on this one.
Yeah, he always talks Howard Hawks being his big influence, but I mean, maybe he's like Woody Allen not admitting Charlie Chaplin's his influence.
Speaking of influences, by the way, when I was watching Carrie, it's amazing how much Psycho is in that movie. I really didn't think about that before.
Oh man, De Palma is such a huge Hitchcock fan.
Yeah.
I mean,
De Palma takes Carpenter does it to where it's homage. I mean, De Palma was like, VHS wasn't around back then, so.
De Palma's like the 80s, 70s Tarantino. Like that.
Very much so.
Yeah, it's a good approximation.
That's really good.
And, I mean, Tarantino loves De Palma movies. Like, Blowout's one of his favorite movies, I'm pretty sure, actually.
Well, right. Yeah, but Tarantino at least has multiple influences.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you got to give De Palma credit, though. He did shoot the hell out of
I love De Palma's stuff. I mean, all of these guys are, I mean, him and, like, I mean, Lucas and Spielberg, they're heavily cashing in on the serials they loved as kids. Like, they all, they're all clearly, and Scorsese as well, taking kind of pulp genre. It's, these directors certainly, it's not like what Tarantino did was new, which is, I think, something a lot of people kind of, like, forget when they, like, for people that, like, want to bash on Tarantino. It's not like no other director's ever taken work from other directors before, or same with, like, Rob Zombie. Like, these guys that are the masters, you know, the fun friends that are Coppola, Lucas, Spielberg, and De Palma, among others, like, those guys all took from things that they loved when they were...
They all admit, they're like, well, I just wanted to make movies I wanted to see.
Yeah.
Which means... You know, they like movies and wanted movies like those. I mean, yeah, Tarantino goes to get that. And, I mean, Rob Zombie, too. And Rob Zombie's just, he's just like the horror version of Tarantino, pretty much. Cribs from all the stuff he knows and crafts his own.
Here's a good monologue. Here's another good monologue by Donald Pleasance.
He's terrific with all these. I mean, it's like I said, it's like dark poetry whenever he speaks.
He does sell it really well. I mean, that's essential to set up the tension that pays off in the second half of the movie.
And he obviously loved the part. He came back, he played character 5 times, and he always said he'd stop at 22. And I mean, he even had a horrible time on the set of Halloween 5 and came back for Halloween 6.
I've never seen like interviews with him or whatnot, but I'd like to think that he's kind of like a fun guy to be around. I feel like anybody that's in like Escape from New York and gets in that kind of mode is probably a guy that likes to have fun on sets. Especially, like, when? How old is he now in this movie? Like 50 something? Halloween.
Easily.
Yeah.
Donald Pleasance, 78. Let's see. Good picture on Wikipedia. Nice young picture. 1919. So yeah,
he was pushing 60 when it came out.
Yeah,
he was an RAF flight lieutenant. Oh, that's in Great Escape.
Yeah.
Oh wait, no, he was. He actually did serve in the Royal Air Force. Never mind. Brought to the screen. What's Tommy Doyle supposed to be for Halloween? Just a spaceman?
I think just a spacesuit.
His helmet.
Maybe he's Charlton Heston from Planet of the Apes.
Actually, yeah, that might be it. No, I think we've I think that's established ones. I think you like see that somewhere on him.
Yeah. And you know, the interiors of this house, these houses just feel like I grew up in, I was born in 82, but I do have memories of 70s stuff becoming 80s. There's that transition period where it's about the same, but it's just felt like something I knew so much.
Yeah.
Even if I was past this time when I first saw the movie, it just resonated with me really well.
I mean, it's not like this is a period piece either. I mean, it does just looks like they
It looks like suburbia, you know. It doesn't look like, you know, a castle in Transylvania or, you know. It
looks lived
like,
in, for sure.
Right. Or, you know, the House of Usher in the 18th century or something, you know.
Yeah. Like, a lot of, like, a lot of stuff for horror for a long time was all gothic stuff that just, you know, you can't relate with.
This seemed plausible to me when I was, you know, when I saw it when I was 12. I think it was, like, 1981. When I saw it, or 1980 maybe, but it just seemed like very plausible, very like, damn, this guy could be, you know, waiting for me at home now, you know.
What was the horror trend around? Well, I guess it's 70s, so it really
it was
all over.
I mean
it's like
Chainsaw 74. Yeah, Chainsaw was big in the midnight movie circuit. There were a lot of horror movies. I mean, Dawn of the Dead. I remember seeing for the first time the original. There was a big like push on Satan after the success of Rosemary's Baby and The Exorcist.
Oh, The Exorcist, yeah, The Exorcist.
Yeah, you had The
so
Omen.
There were a ton of devil movies, you know, The Omen.
Amityville Horror.
Exactly, you know, stuff like that.
That was a silly question. It's 70s. There's plenty of horror movies coming out.
Yeah, there were a lot.
I guess it's
but none, I mean, this wasn't, it wasn't like this, you know, it wasn't, there was no supernatural aspect here to me, for me. You know, Michael Myers was just someone who was incredibly deranged and had a plan and a big knife. You know what I mean? He didn't have, you know, the powers of Satan behind him or, you know what I mean? Or, it just seemed like something that could happen.
Oh, yeah, please.
And it seemed like a very real suburban setting. And I was at the right age and, I don't know, it scared me.
Here's a great scene right here, guys.
Yes.
Right.
I spilled some butter. All of my clothes need to come off now.
Butter is toxic.
The one thing with Michael Myers is with this film, is you just don't know like it's so much more mysterious. He has no motive here.
Makes it scarier.
I don't remember when I discovered he was his sister, but that always taints my mind in this situation. Like I can never really. It's hard for me to watch this movie without that in mind.
Yeah, it doesn't count, though. I mean, when you watch this movie, that stuff is not true.
I mean, yeah, but, like, I can't, like, it's impossible for me to picture it that
no,
way.
No, I hear you. Just, like, watching, you know, like, Leia and Luke kiss in Empire, you're not supposed to say, ew, gross.
For some reason, like, well, yeah, but for some reason, that just doesn't, like, it doesn't affect my viewings of those movies. For some reason, I can always... It's always Jamie Lee Curtis is definitely the sister of Michael when I watch Halloween. I can't separate myself from that fact.
Spoilers.
I love that he's showing the thing opening sequence just because it's so cool.
Yes,
and here and just like he did it in the remake of the thing.
We're shadowing.
Yeah,
but that's such a cool burn in.
In Halloween 2, they're watching Night of the Living Dead. And then in Halloween H2O, they're watching Scream 2.
Oh, those are fun. Like the What Hills Have Eyes poster in Evil Dead and the Evil Dead poster in Nightmare.
Yeah. Well, in the Freddy glove in Evil Dead 2.
Right.
That's actually stolen from the set of...
It could be Charlton Heston.
You mean Taylor?
Yeah. No, Charlton Heston just played himself. he just took on some identity of Taylor to get away from it all.
And played Taylor. Ah.
It just says astronaut on his shirt. His onesie.
Major Matt Mason.
Steve Austin ever wears something like that?
No, his was orange.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. His jumpsuit.
And carve the jack-o'-lantern. And this, I love this sequence where Michael pops up in this. So creepy. Yeah. And you figure this is it.
Yeah.
This has got to be it for Annie, and it's not. Just the lighting, everything's just, I love it.
What's irritating is watching this movie with certain people now and them saying, she should just be doing this or that. It's like, well, this doesn't happen at this time.
It's not, like, the rules don't apply here. Like, it's hard to tell people. Like, if you're gonna watch this movie for the first time and you're like 35, and you go to, like, the theater or something, I always suggest with this movie, and you're an older, more mature person, to watch it by yourself. Don't watch it with people.
Yeah.
Like, I've seen this in a theater, and, you know, people laugh and stuff like that. And
yeah, it's very hard for me to watch this movie with more than just myself.
Yeah, because I think a lot of people's, you know, if some people's, I'm not saying this is the case, definitely, but some people's reaction in crowds when they're nervous or scared is to make jokes and, you know, laugh and stuff. But
I don't know. When I saw it in the theater at the Midnight Movies, it wasn't a joke. People were jumping. It was definitely like a date type movie. You know what I mean?
Well, that's when you first
saw it. Yeah, this was you had the ideal era to check it out.
Like now, when you watch it, unless it's like in some specialty theater, like the New Beverly Cinema in L.A., like you're watching it in a public screening at some regular random theater, like it doesn't play as well, which is unfortunate.
Right. Right.
Michael being right there is creepy again, by the way.
And Michael, for most of the movies, played by Nick Castle, who was the director of The Last Starfighter.
Obviously, yes.
But he's played by multiple people throughout the movie. Like, whenever he breaks something, it's Tommy Lee Wallace, because he was a set designer, and he knew how exactly to break things so they wouldn't have to, like, redo it or set it up again if all possible. And, like, Tony Moran plays him with the mask off. And Deborah Hill is the hand, but I think she also stood in a shot. And it's been rumored that John Carpenter himself was, like, Michael in a shot, too.
Jeez, what? Like, Michael, Michael and Blofeld and Kaiser Soze, played by the most people, apparently.
Yeah. I mean, it was part of the fun with me when I was young learning. I was like, oh, my gosh, that's cool.
Like, well, I guess say what you will about Freddy, at least he kept it real and stayed the same the whole time.
Actually, there's in part two, they replaced Robert Englund, and it was going horribly, so they brought him back. And there's a couple shots still in there with his substitute.
It's a good ass shot, by the way, for
Randy. Yeah.
Brad Dourif, I guess, then. Way to go. You stuck with it for Chucky.
Yes.
Warwick Davis, good job, man. Leprechaun for life.
Leprechaun for life.
In the Hood.
So the sequel to In the Hood, yeah. That's what I was gonna say.
There was a sequel, Back to the Hood.
Yeah. Leprechaun Life didn't choose... He didn't choose Leprechaun Life. Leprechaun Life chose him.
All his life he wanted to be a leprechaun. I love that she just immediately tells him that she got stuck. Doesn't care who it is.
And I'm a big fan of this character of Annie. Like, she's one of my favorite, like, slasher movie characters that didn't make it of all time.
That's a great Michael shot once again. But no, I know what you mean.
Yeah, and she actually was she married for a while Tommy Lee Wallace.
She must have strangled her really nice or something.
Yeah, well, yeah. It's probably why she appears in Halloween 3.
Did he strangle her, or did the other ones? The other Michael?
I think I don't know who played in the car scene.
Huh. Come on, Brand. These are the pressing questions that people want to know. What are you doing?
Hell, I know.
Back there,
I have failed.
Who killed
who? I'll just leave the podcast right now. Brandon out.
Where can people find more of your work? Okay.
Don't even bother. I'm a failure. But no, and the kids, too, sitting and watching horror movies in the dark living room by themselves late at night. That's totally me.
Yeah.
When I was, you know, watching something like this. That's what I did. I mean, it was by take me to the video store, get three movies, and I would wait till everyone went to bed and watch them all. And they were usually horror movies.
They'd just be on TV, and I'd watch them all the time. Child's Play 2 and 3, always on TV when I was young. I'd always watch them. I'd always get scared of Child's Play 2 and 3. They're not good movies. I watch them now, good shot.
I'd give you 2, but 3, come on, Aaron.
Well, 3, I think I've just explained my intense passion for the garbage man who dies in the garbage truck scene in Child's Play 3. Because he's so innocent, he just wants to help some kid, and Chucky kills him for no reason. The barber guy deserved it, but the garbage man did nothing. The garbage man can't in that scene.
That's one thing I do give Child's Play 3. It has Andy Robinson in it. I'm a fan of the actor. Like, he's just a fun guy.
But Child's Play 2, yeah, there's some creepy stuff in that movie. And I'm young, so I was young then. So it's like, oh, this is like, yeah, a doll. It's crazy.
See, when I was first discovering horror, like, I started watching on TV, but once I discovered how much they hacked out of it, I couldn't watch, couldn't watch TV movies anymore.
I was that same way, but I didn't have any other access, so if Predator came on, or Predator 2 came on, other movies I also watched a ton and still love. I love, those are legit good, Predator 1 especially.
I mean, well, it's also how I started collecting more, too, was when I learned that, because I used to just tape, like, have my blank VHS tapes and, like, tape off TV, and that was it, that was how I had it, and... Yeah. Then when I started learning that, I started replacing all them, and boom.
I have that for, I had that kind of feeling for Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. I had it on tape, and I never, no, I had Temple of Doom and Crusade on tape back-to-back, because I probably played that day on TV, but I never saw the ending of the Temple of Doom for the longest time, and I never saw the beginning of Last Crusade for the longest time. So Temple of Doom would be, Temple of Doom would end with him climbing up the bridge. End. Like, I had no idea. I had no idea what happened. After. Like, he climbs up the bridge after he kills everybody else dies, and that's it. Then Crusade starts at the ship. So I didn't see any of young Indiana Jones forever for the longest time.
He fell off the bridge and landed on that ship.
Exactly. Like, that was, like, I never realized how much of I missed both of these. Well, I mean, the end of Temple of Doom is kind of inconsequential. But the beginning of Crusade is like, wow, there's a whole, like, train sequence here that's awesome. Anyway, back to Halloween. This is a great scene. The established of the shot of the car's locked. Everything that follows this, you know what's going on. You know Michael's around. She's whistling this song. You know why she's going here, because she's trying to get keys to go into the car. And then, and we'll get to it, but I mean...
She's so nonchalant.
She is. While also, this movie doing great job of setting up geography for this house. Like, you get a great understanding of the details involved and what's across the street and the house that Laurie's in as well. But then
don't get in the car, it's Christine.
Opens the door. Boom. And that's such a great, like,
and what? Then she realizes it.
Yeah. And then she sees the fog in the glass. I don't know how Michael did that, by the way, but good job. And done. And you forget it's a slow death with no music. Terrifying. Like, there's this guy strangling me. I can't do anything about it. No one's coming to help me. No one can hear me.
The last time I saw this in the theater, people were laughing during this.
Because of those bug eyes. But besides,
bug eyes,
I mean, it's just such a chilling scene. And knife. Done.
And
this is not R-rated stuff, by the way. But
no,
it got it.
Not yet.
It's not R-rated till PJ Souls.
Yep.
It's up in bed.
You guys would see Michael's sisters. But even then, in like 78, the boobs wouldn't give this an R rating.
Yeah, it would. In 78, the boobs would.
Yeah. Maybe. And one thing, too, this is a movie that, like, after people in their head, it was a lot more violent than after the movie, thinking back on it, than it actually appeared.
Hey, Howard the Duck comic.
It is Howard the Duck.
He was just there on set one day.
And this is just creepy. And Tommy looks out the window. And that girl right there, she's on like one of those Real Housewives shows now.
Real Housewives of Haddonfield?
Yeah. She's... I don't know, Filthy Rich and something now that her name's Kyle Richards.
Kim Richards? Was she also in Escape from Witch Mountain?
I hope so.
No, it's Kyle Richards.
Oh,
she has a sister named Kim Richards. Her sister is Kim Richards.
Okay.
Who was on? Sense. Who was in Escape of Assault on Precinct 13. I wonder how that audition process went.
No one believes Tommy, and no one's really sure if they believe Loomis. Huh.
Actually, now I figured this out. Because, like, Kim Richards, I guess, was the girl that got shot in Assault on Precinct 13. And Kyle Richards is the girl that survived Halloween. John Carpenter hated these girls.
There's actually debate. Halloween 4, when Rachel and is taking Jamie, she's with a friend to take Jamie to get her costume. The girl in the car she's with is a brunette, and her name is Lindsay.
Mm-hmm.
People wonder if that's actually Lindsay Wallace, because in an earlier script it was, but when they shot the movie, the character was on the shooting script was just Lindsay.
Lindsay.
And the character's inconsequential to anything.
Yeah.
Else, but the age appropriate for.
She'd probably move out of Haddonfield.
Yeah,
hold on, because I like this. Loomis gets like this moment of like, hey, I made a joke. I'm so happy about myself. And then immediately scared. Right?
It's one of the few times you see him grin.
Yeah. And then his dreams are immediately crushed because he gets scared right away. Maybe this will turn out all right. Nope.
And I have to commend them on every time they've released this movie on Blu-ray, it's felt like I've never seen the movie before the first time I watch it. They've done such a great job with both transfers. The first transfer was pretty damn good, and then they went to redo this, and I was like, oh, wow, okay. Totally worth the upgrade.
Interesting choice to break this movie up and how it inserts the Loomis scenes. Like, it could have easily stuck with the Michael stuff and just made it unrelenting and of him finally cashing in on this. But no, we're still going back to Loomis and mm-hmm. monologues with him and Chuck Cypher.
It helps to build the mystique of Michael.
Yeah.
We have more exposition to get through.
and it helps to make it, you know, these are the two guys that are the parental, you know, protector figures for the girls, and they seem so far away, and I think that's what's trying to establish.
Yet so close.
It's so close. I mean, that was one of the key things with, like, in the Friday the 13th series, whenever they wrote them, was we need to keep kids as far away from parental, you know, protection as possible, because if they're around adults, and it feels a little too comforting. So that's essentially what's going on here. Because we, you know, there's neighbors and stuff, but we don't know them. We don't see them outside. We don't think of them to give the assist.
Now, here we get Bob Wan. Brandon, you know this. What's his name? Dennis Quaid was supposed to, could have played this part,
yes.
Right?
Dennis Quaid hung out on the set because he was him and PJ Souls. They were married, I believe, for a short time, too. And yeah, he was on the set. She was bigger than him at this time, I think.
Yeah, she was pretty big at this point. Yeah.
All he had was what, like Breaking
Away, maybe away. Even, but yeah, she was with him, and she'd done Carrie, she had this, and she got Stripes. Like, I don't know, you know,
she's
what
a babe.
Happened.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What did happen? I gotta look this up.
Then I didn't see her again till Devil's Rejects. Like, but I mean. You know, a lot of actresses back then just, like, quit to be moms, too, so.
True. So there's, like, is this a long shot, too? Because I know there's like,
yeah,
the big, because there's, like, a dolly track that PJ Souls trips on when she's like running out of the scene.
And then we get a shadow of Michael, and the TV's been moved, too, if you notice.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah, PJ Souls, there you go. Stripes.
Yeah, like I said, Stripes is the last thing I remember seeing her in.
Yeah, there's
Devil's Rejects.
There's other things here. But yeah, not like, you know, movies you know, or movies where she's like the big star. I remember Jawbreaker. I remember that. That's a movie.
And I love the contrast between Laurie and Annie as babysitters.
Oh, yeah.
Like, Lori does everything she can to entertain the kid for the evening and is all involved. And then Annie is doing her best to get rid of the kid. The kid's sitting by herself watching TV while Annie's on the phone the whole time.
Good girl, bad girl.
Yes. And I find it funny some of the ties that Carpenter put in the script to this, like little kind of Easter egg things for Halloween 2. Because he did. He did write. Him and Deborah Hill did write it. But like,
yeah.
Laurie has a crush on a guy named Ben Tramer. And in Halloween 2, Dr. Loomis sees a guy in a Michael Myers mask and traces him down. And he gets hit by a cop car, which it slams the guy into a van and it explodes. And we find out later that that was Ben Tramer.
So Laurie will never get the loving she could have had from Ben
Laurie, Tramer. Yeah, would never.
It's all destiny, some would say.
Yes, and there's just little fun tidbits in there like that.
Oh, hold on. Nick Castle directed Major Payne. That movie's amazing.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
And Dennis the Menace. Not as amazing as Major Payne, but still decent.
He was working.
He's doing his job.
Getting a check, man.
Hey, he directed Macaulay.
And what?
What was... Macaulay wasn't Dennis the Menace?
Macaulay Culkin was too good for Dennis the Menace.
Oh, was he? Which one was he?
Mason Gamble of Rushmore fame was, of course, in Dennis the Menace.
Oh, okay.
Macaulay did Richie Rich.
That's okay. I got him screwed up.
Superior film.
I bet Nick Castle wanted Richie Rich, though.
He wanted it bad, I bet. Yeah. I'm looking at Richie Rich now as your director. Who landed that one? Who landed that gold mine?
I love the jack-o'-lantern bedside. It's a nice touch.
I was hoping it would be someone like great, but it's Donald P. Petrie, who of course did Grumpy Old Men, Mystic Pizza, Welcome to Moose. Oh God, okay, Miss Congeniality. Oh, he has such a great Wikipedia picture. It's like, hey, it's me. Like, that's his picture. Anyway, back to
how are ya?
Bob Wan's giving the love into PJ Souls.
With his glasses on.
Oh, yeah. It's Bob Wan.
Michael's still watching. They've moved upstairs, and so has Michael.
Richie Rich has an amazing poster. This is Macaulay Culkin, like, holding up a fist of triumph, and John Larroquette tried to strap to the top of a car. Richie Rich. Good casual toplessness right here.
Yes,
it's real. Not done out to saying that because like, hey, boobs. It's just it's real. Like it's
And I love the banter in this movie between the kids is just like terrific. It's funny. It's memorable.
Yeah, I don't think anyone's giving a 70s bad performance here. I think it all feels very naturalistic.
Well, and if they are, the dialogue just helps. Amazing. Like, I mean, I don't know, for me, like, a lot of people grew up watching, like, teen comedies and stuff like that. They watched, like, Breakfast Club over and over. I guess my teen movies were these horror slasher films growing up, like the Halloweens and the Friday the 13th. So those were my teen characters with quotables, I guess.
I can't hardly wait, and I don't like that movie. I don't know what's wrong with me, apparently.
Yeah. I didn't mind that one.
And freaking Hook for younger days, and hate Hook so much.
Understand. You hate Hook so much. Really?
I put it, it's down there with Always. And
ooh, wow. That is.
It's not a good Spielberg movie.
I haven't seen Hook since I saw it in the theater, and I've chosen never to revisit it for some reason.
It's just long. Like, I don't understand why people, like, do people forget that it's at 2.5 hours long, and, like, Peter Pan doesn't arrive till, like, 90 minutes into the movie? Like, is Rufio that, like, intoxicating? He doesn't arrive until, like, an hour in the movie. I don't understand Hook.
You don't need to tonight, because we're understanding Halloween.
That's a great jump scare right there. That's
like, boom, yes. Yeah. This is a great kill.
And this is a great I love just Michael in this scene of just the reaction he has to doing this thing.
All Nick Castle, apparently.
That's a great, just the head tilt that happens here. Like, it's
I love the feet, too. When his feet just come uncurled.
Yeah. I like how it ties into the dog, where he kills the dog, and you just see the legs kind of...
Yeah.
Like, you're just helpless. Just stopped in your tracks, dead. Head tilt.
Kind of looking at him.
Admiring it. Double held.
Taking his time. He's a professional. He wants to enjoy what he's doing.
Strong knife, by the way, too.
Yes.
Must be Cutco. This is creepy as hell.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I needed one a couple years ago. I went out to my wife's nightclub for Halloween and needed a makeshift costume real quick. So I went as that. Confused people like crazy.
My friend did the shower from Karate Kid 1 year, and nobody got that. They just called him Shower Man.
I got asked if I was from Beetlejuice quite often.
That's not a bad guess, though.
No.
I guess.
That's pretty good.
Oh, man.
I wonder if this is how Michael convinced the trucker to pull over. He just wore this classic ghost costume.
Yes.
Can you help me with my car?
He poked holes in it, too. That was...
Or maybe there was like an extra nurse's uniform in the back, and he wooed them. This is the only reason you need a full frame version of this movie, right? That's a boob joke.
About to get to, yeah.
That's a great, like, I like that, like, Michael hesitation, like, well, I guess I'll kill her now.
Okay. You know what? Yeah, I could kill her with the phone cord.
I'm curious what the rest of his plan would have been if she just sat there the whole night, like, just bitching at him. Do you know how, like, planned out these kind of attacks were of, like, what the girls' reactions were going to be versus what Michael was going to do?
They were scripted.
It's like, here's the scene where Michael's going to take you down. Like, because the curtain comes, or the sheet comes off his head here, and I imagine that's planned, but at the same time, it's so, like, cool and just well, like...
It's all natural. And,
yeah, exactly.
It's a terrific reveal, and it's the first time we get to see, like, clear what Michael looks like. The awesome mask that they would, for some reason, fail like hell in sequels to replicate. Halloween 2 is the same mask. Halloween 4, there's two shots of the movie with that mask, but the hair had weathered and it was like bright blonde.
I haven't seen Resurrection, or I haven't seen H2O in a while. What's that one like?
That was the... Okay. 5, I think, has like the worst mask, hands down, but H2O has got a lot of problems. There's like 9 masks in that movie. And
it's
like,
geez, okay.
There's even a CG mask. They start off the movie using the mask from Halloween 6, and then they have like 4 or 5 different masks. From shot to shot, it'll change, and it's rather, it bugs me quite a bit. And one of the problems I have with their main mask was like the eye holes were too big, and you could clearly just see his eyes.
Well, surely Resurrection corrected this, right?
Yeah. Resurrection had one mask with a big fro, and it just looked like an angry chimp.
Well, yeah, they had Busta Rhymes in an entire bank.
Yes, this is true. because you have me on here calling Busta Rhymes an angry chimp now. Yes.
Oh, man. That's
like,
not right.
Can't wait to see the comments for that.
Oh, no. Give me some more. I liked what Rob Zombie tried, essentially, since he kind of...
His mask looked pretty good.
Because he actually had kind of an origin story for the mask itself, too, which was pretty neat.
And he wasn't afraid to, like, do different things with it and batter it.
Yeah.
It's very cool. I thought the mask in Halloween 6 actually isn't too bad.
The Curse of Michael Myers? Yeah, that was not... That one, actually, yeah, that one is... That movie's weird, man. I just watched that again.
It's fascinatingly weird, and it's a great point of discussion with its production history.
We have to talk about the ending after we do this, because I was still like, what?
I wrote 3 pieces dedicated to that movie in my retrospective, because it's just... I mean, it's a... Big point of discussion when talking about the Halloween series is that movie.
I want to shout that out, too, by the way. We kind of mentioned it in past, but on Brandon's blog, the naptownnerd.blogspot.com, he's been writing... He has basically posted at least one article a day that revolves around the Halloween franchise in some way for all of October so far. And it's been... I've been very much enjoying it, including the ones written by Jim Dietz, who's on this podcast with us right now.
Oh, well, thanks.
As well as one of the other... How many guests have you had? Just the Jim and...
Jim and Laney.
And Laney.
And I have some more coming.
You have some more, cool. And I'm going to write one eventually as well. But yeah, overall, I've been really enjoying all these posts that I've been reading from...
Thank you.
Be sure to check that out.
It was like, yeah, when I first started my James Bond series, I was going through October, and I was like, oh, you know what? I marked on my calendar. I was like, next year, I am going to write about this, and I'm going to do it, like, overdo it. So... I hope people have been enjoying them.
We didn't really commemorate your kind of year status as a podcaster, but I mean, I essentially got you into this because of your James Bond series. Like, I was enjoying reading those so much, where I was like, we should talk about Skyfall when that comes out, but that was like 3 months ahead of time, so I'm like, well, let's do a commentary. So that was, so we started
doing it. Turned into four commentaries.
Because we enjoyed doing those so much. So.
Yes. Oh, yes, and I appreciate it. I've loved doing these, so thank you, and yeah, thank you for bringing me on board.
Sure, it's fun. It's fun doing these, especially with someone that's, you know, doing retrospective pieces. They obviously have a lot of information to share about these movies that we talk about. So that's why I like having you on a lot of these, as well as Jim too. Because Jim, what I like about Jim, besides the fact that he has the best voice on podcasting, he's not to point out your age, but you've seen a lot of these movies that we do when they came out, and so that's a unique perspective.
I'm old. I'm an old guy.
But you have a unique perspective, and you also like to talk about these things. So yes. It works well to bring you on these commentaries.
Yeah, Jim and I like to talk about old stuff.
Yeah, I'm old.
Awesome.
So we just got all the way by this, but I love that whole scene of Laurie's basic curiosity of, why are my friends not answering me?
From the moment she goes to check on the kids and walks down the stairs, I'm just amazement. Just love how it shot everything.
This is all one-er, right? We're all in the same take still, aren't we?
Well, from when she left the house.
From when we left the house, yeah.
Yeah, and man, this is just such a pivotal moment in horror and film history. I mean, this is where essentially this would appear a jillion times from 1980 to 1984 in theaters.
Anybody there?
This is so, and it's so freaky because you know this guy's here and you know he's killed these other girls so far.
Don't go in there.
There's such a great context of like God, there's nothing good can come out of this. You need to stop, girl, and go back. But she's not going to.
Don't go in there. I told her not to go in there.
That guy who's been stalking you all day, he's in there.
Is the fake glass in this scene, Brandon?
No.
Not yet. They replace it later on.
When you have the rake in the door, it'll be there.
I'd love someone to make some kind of fan video that's like Michael's perspective.
Because he's going to run around the house and put a rake there. Right,
exactly.
Now.
And because he'd have to like kind of hurry up and set up things. And he's got to be walking around the house.
You know what would be kind of a cool concept for an experimental film is to do Scream from Billy and Stu's angle. That'd be kind of interesting. If you wanted to do that and have characters talking and stuff, make it interesting.
Even like Scream 3 tried that by just warping that back. God, I hate Scream 3 too.
Yeah. But,
I try to adding more onto that backstory. Scream 3 is like the Halloween 6 of movies.
But more Scooby-Doo.
Well, I guess Maniac is the kind of the answer to that question. And among other, like, I obviously like Peeping Tom is like the ultimate example of that one. But.
Yeah.
Have you seen Peeping Tom? Is that part of any retrospective?
If I ever get to
Psycho, I guess.
Yeah, probably attach it to Psycho. Because I attach Black Christmas to Halloween.
Exactly, yeah. That's actually what I was wondering if that was going to come up. Peeping Tom is another
example. I titled it because I'm not ignorant.
Yeah. Peeping Tom is a film that was released in England that kind of came out around this, like a year before, maybe months before Psycho did, and has this. It's not even that similar. It's just more of like, there's a guy that's stabbing women, like, kind of thing. I
mean, yeah, and, you know, when people are like, well, Psycho totally influenced Halloween, I'm like, the similarities are people stabbing people, and Jamie Lee Curtis is Janet Leigh's daughter. I mean, if you, just because people stab people with a knife, I mean, does that make them similar pictures? Because Psycho's rather tame. There's one murder, or there's two murders, but...
And the very concept of the movie is completely different. I mean, and that's like a psychological thriller to an extent that shifts protagonists three times. I mean, it's...
Peeping Tom has a lot more to say about the voyeur and the whole idea of watching, you know, the difference between watching something and being part of something and where the line is drawn and stuff. It's pretty artful, mm-hmm. you know, a film. Not that Psycho isn't, but just in a different way, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so now Laurie's stumbled onto nonsense here. Well, I mean, he's not his sister in there. They're not related in this movie, but what is the purpose of this? I guess the idea is you don't know, so it doesn't matter.
It's just creepy, ritualistic looking stuff.
He brought the damn tombstone. So I guess it's like, okay.
it's not supposed to make sense here. That's part of the creepiness.
It helps that, okay, so did did Carpenter and Hill establish that they're brother and sister and them writing?
Carpenter was drunk one night and needed some kind of hook for Halloween 2 and threw that in there. And he says he wishes he didn't.
Okay.
And I don't mind it for Halloween 2, but when you get to Halloween 4, that's the one that establishes that this is what this series is going to be. Mm-hmm. Is that, you know, because they have in Halloween 4 is Laurie Strode's daughter.
This doesn't work in full frame at all.
No.
No.
No, but this is awesome.
How does he miss?
And that was Tommy Lee Wallace as well, because he had to hit her with that knife.
How does he miss? Like,
but this,
yes, this is amazing. This is Nick Castle, and I love the way he walks down the stairs.
Yeah, it's really nice.
It's incredible. And I once mocked it in one of my little high school movies.
I think it's because he's pissed off because he missed for the first time. Like everything else, he's done with such precision. Now he's like, "How did I?" Like even he has to be like, "How did what? Like, how did I do that wrong? I was good at this." There's the fake glass.
There it is. Yeah. And then he just busting through this door is just scary. It's real.
Yeah.
It just feels like, oh man, it doesn't feel like some actor.
Yeah, because it's not like breaking out.
Or stuntman coming after.
It feels like a real door just got broken into.
It's a guy with a big knife.
Same with the closet later on. Just terrifying, the closet scene.
For some reason, I'm thinking about that movie Behind the Mask.
Oh, that's a good. I like that movie a lot. Yeah,
I did too. I'm like, I'm seeing the thing with the rake, and it's like, okay, well, we set this up here so she could do this. And
it's a terrific little movie.
Yeah, it is.
And I watched it recently, like a couple months ago again, and I forgot it's actually kind of a found footage movie.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the first part of it is.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, you know, it doesn't cross your mind. I mean, it's beyond that in terms of its quality, but. It was before, like, that was before, like, even Cloverfield, right?
Yeah, yeah, it was before Cloverfield.
There's what's like a, what was like Man Bite Dog? I'm thinking of just early found footage movies. But yeah, by the way, the hottest I think Laurie is in this movie is when she's knocking on the neighbor's door.
here's where the trick where you find out the house that they're shooting inside of is not this house because the door handles are on the opposite sides.
Yeah.
And this is just, oh man, my heart, this scene right here was just, my heart was pounding when the first time I saw this as a kid. I was going nuts, because, you know, like I said, if Michael gets Laurie, he gets you.
This is this is the kind of thing that always works on me, the kind of like, there's a threat coming, and there's a door locked, we need to open this door. Because it happens in Evil Dead also, with the presence in the camera, yes. Shooting out at Ash's sister, and it's just like, I don't care about the time logic involved in this sequence. If Michael probably would have reached her in real life, but I mean, it just works so well.
Yeah, there's a couple shots in some of the early Friday the 13th movies that, you know, almost captured that magic of the chase.
Yeah.
That they had right there, and with some really cool inventive shots themselves, but nothing came even close.
See,
to that.
That's kind of my problems with the Friday series. I just don't think it's. Beyond like the death stuff, I just never feel like I'm getting that great creativity. And
I saw the Friday movies before Halloween,
mm-hmm.
So you know, being inferior to Halloween, it worked to advantage. When I'm like, oh, I've seen nice. Friday. What's Halloween gonna do? And wow,
oh, that's gonna leave a mark.
Yeah. God, I do. So Nottingham is just cheering during that point too, like when he just falls down for the first time.
Yeah.
And then they yell at her when she drops the knife.
Don't put the knife down.
But, I mean, in all honesty, this is, for all intents and purposes, we'll call it the first slasher film. You stab a guy with a needle in the neck, you think he's dead.
She's looking at the body of a seemingly dead person.
What we see as cliche now, then, really wasn't.
He doesn't appear to be breathing.
People would do these things very phony, and then it would be that. So, but this right now, I mean, I guess Carpenter kind of wanted people to be like, no, don't drop that. But you don't know. This is the first time he's been attacked.
Got another cut.
But I just remember, like, the entire, when, you know, with the success of this movie, all the slasher films that came in its wake, Prom Night, Tourist Trap, Sleepaway Camp. Yeah, I mean, there were just so many. I mean, they were trying to, you know, emulate the success of this movie. And, you know, they went for gore and they went for bigger knives and more indestructible villains or whatnot. But they really didn't understand, like, this creepy suburban vibe that really pervades this movie is really its secret weapon. I mean, it's really, you know, that's why it was scary to watch this in the theater when it came, you know, when it came out or near when it came out when I saw it. You know?
I do enjoy the first Friday the 13th actually is more, it infuses like a, the Agatha Christie, 10 Little Indians and Then There Were None vibe, although it has a massive cheat for its reveal, but it's still, it works in that fashion. It kind of can be its own thing.
It does have that point of view thing going too. I forget about that sometimes.
Yeah.
It did have a kind of identity in the first one.
Yeah. And I mean, Halloween was the blueprint, but Friday the 13th is the one that truly spawned everything coming out after.
I love
that
this
movie hit.
Oh my God.
This is good. Oh yeah. And it looks even better on this new Blu-ray. This shot right here is.
That's so just, she's rocking those bell bottoms, by the way. I love her logic. She gets the kids safe. Michael doesn't care about the kids, but still she keeps that in mind. She tries to do something. She opens some doors, and that makes...
And it doesn't even faze Michael. He's like, yeah, you're in the closet.
Yeah, he's got a sixth sense about the Lord.
This image is just creepy. And there's been, like, specials and documentaries where they slow that up, and it's even creepier.
And this is, I mean, there's just no way out. That's what you think right now. Like, what can she do? It's great. It's good. It's great that she knows how to unwind a clothes hanger as quick as she can.
Yes. Well, you know, and Lainey Feaser, who wrote me the first guest spot, was, you know, her article was about taking the line of Lori calling herself an old Girl Scout and applying it to her survival tactics in this, and it actually, you know, it fits quite well with her, you know, babysitting and her skills and her ability to escape with Michael.
That light coming on is awesome.
Yeah.
That light coming on makes the scene even better. Like, I don't know why it does it, but it does. Just it coming on and off like that, that's so just killer. Stab.
Stab him.
Drops the knife. Let's try this again.
And right in the chest.
Do you think he like heals? Like Wolverine style?
She just missed every important.
Well, I mean, even at the blinding, like, he's not blind anymore after that.
Hey, in the next movie, she'll shoot him in both eyes. Both eyes. He'll come back for more sequels.
As well as Donald Pleasance.
Yes. Donald Pleasance is in the middle of the he is the starting point of explosion in Survive.
The Haddonfield Memorial Hospital explosion of 1978.
Yes. Which was covered by reporter Dana Carvey. Wow.
Do people yell when she tosses it again?
Yes. After the first one, she gets away with it. It's okay with the first one, but that one, you
fool
can
me
yell.
Once, shame on you. Fool me twice, you ain't gonna fool me again.
But funny enough, he doesn't pick up the knife.
Well, he realizes, like, okay, clearly this plan is not working. The old strangle plan seemed to do pretty well on the first two girls. Maybe I should just stick with that one. That's what he's thinking.
Knives are for men.
But the knife is so much flashy. I mean, I brought the knife. Why did I bring the knife if I'm not going
to
use it?
I do like that the instructions to the kids means go outside and scream heavily, apparently.
And here comes, like, my favorite shot in a movie ever.
That's a great one.
So good.
That should be the cover for a movie. Why isn't that a poster? Like, honestly.
There was somebody who... have you ever been to the fake Criterion site?
I haven't seen that one, I guess.
There's one with that on there.
That's like that guy. I mean, that's a great image.
It is.
There's a lot of great still... I mean, the house is a great still shot in this movie. That's how good this movie is in terms of, like, things you can pause and look at.
But, yeah. This is so awesome.
So reliant on simplicity, just guy walking.
I remember seeing like this and Texas Chainsaw and Dawn of the Dead all for the first time in a row. After seeing this, I just wanted to check out as many horror movies as I could.
The mask comes off a little bit. He's not supposed to look deranged, right? He's just kind of like...
He's supposed to look angelic.
That didn't work. Yeah. Okay, here's my favorite shot right here in this movie.
The little boy at the beginning does.
He's just standing there.
That
is what my article is going to be about, by the way. That's what I'm going to write about. But
awesome.
It's just like, there's no stopping him. Like that's, he's just standing there waiting. It's like, you know, like, it's just great. Oh my God. It's like, what is evil? That image was evil to me.
Do you think, this movie is held up, you know, pretty high in the horror rankings, but if this didn't inspire or spawn the golden era of slashers where it was being knocked off constantly and then have a ton of sequels itself, do you think it'd be held up higher in just the general film pantheon?
You see, if there weren't, like, other movies that came after this that...
If it was just Halloween and it didn't inspire, like, Friday the 13th, My Bloody Valentine, The Prowler...
I would say so just because... I would say so just because of, I mean, someone like Roger Ebert obviously helped this movie out tremendously, but also, like, it was a huge hit, right? It made a lot of money.
Yeah, it did.
It was, but, I mean, but then, just a few short years
later... Would the legacy carry over?
Would the legacy be better because it didn't have the knockoffs? Because, there are a lot of people that just find it to be garbage, the slasher genre, and you know, Halloween's the starting point, so it gets lumped in unfairly with people who may not be familiar with, you know, how great this film is.
I mean, I guess you're asking an impossible question, essentially. Successful movies inspire copycat movies. I mean, that's the industry itself, right?
But The Exorcist hasn't really been ripped off a ton until recently.
No, it was ripped off a lot in the 70s. Was it? Yeah, there were a lot of movies.
I know. Yeah.
I mean, in the 70s, I mean that was that and Rosemary's Baby, in the early 70s spawned a lot of copycats, especially on television movies and things like that. I mean, I'm thinking of one. I mean, there's so many. Alan Alda was in one. You know, but yeah,
I was just thinking more Straight Possession.
We had Audrey Rose, which was a possession movie. She was. I mean, there were just so many. I mean. Like Aaron said, if something is successful, it you know always has copycats. I mean, think of all the cheesy After the Apocalypse movies that came out in the wake of Road Warrior. You know,
yeah,
let alone just sequels to these movies. I mean, Exorcist has like three sequels. How many sequels does Exorcist have?
It's got four, two sequels and one prequel done twice.
One prequel, yeah, exactly. that's where legacy comes from is the fact that other movies want to be like you.
Yeah,
for some reason, mine went to Austin Powers. Women wanted to be with him, men wanted to be like him. I mean, it just comes with the territory movie that becomes that kind of success. And like Halloween, I guess it could stand. I mean, its legacy could be held up because it's one of the biggest independent films of all time as well, right?
That was another thing that really set
until Ninja Turtles.
Yeah.
Well, but Blair Witch, I guess. Blair Witch, Ninja Turtles was technically an independent picture when it came out, but they've since gone back and said no. But
I mean, in the 70s when this was coming out, I mean, indie film was just kind of... I mean, Easy Rider was like the first really big indie film to break out. I mean, the whole studio system was breaking down because of indie films. And this was one of the most commercially successful indie films in 78 that came out. I mean, the fact that it was indie was almost as important as the way it defined a genre itself.
I mean, this one was out for a while and wasn't doing well, and then had to go back around to places it had not done well before.
But there are movies that built momentum over time by their reputation. Yeah. Like, I mean, Aaron said, you know, the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre, you know, they get showings at repertory houses or like you said, brought back around Halloween time or whatever.
Yeah.
So
the movie's ended at this point, by the way. But, Halloween, classic. And I watch it every Halloween. Every October, it is a movie I must watch at some point during this month. That and the Evil Dead trilogy are the only movies I do that for. For me. And Brandon, you've already established it's your favorite movie ever.
Yeah.
And
I'll watch it on Christmas. I'll watch it on Valentine's Day.
It's a franchise I mostly like as well. I get a kick out of watching other Halloween movies, except 3 and Resurrection. I know you like 3 a little more than I do, Brandon, but regardless, I like 5 more than you like it, so there you go.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't hate 3.
But with all that said, that's going to have to do it. The movie's over, so there's nothing else for us to talk about. we can go on and talk about horror for hours, I bet. But
this commentary brought to you by Silver Shamrock.
Yeah.
Yes.
But that's going to do it for this week's bonus episode about Now, Theron, and Abe. You can find the other episodes of iTunes at HHWLOD, Stitcher, outnowpodomatic.com. Feel free to email us, outnowpodcast@gmail.com. Let us know your thoughts on Halloween or the franchise in general. Facebook.com/outnowpodcast, Twitter.com/outnow_podcast. You can follow and like us there and send more thoughts on Halloween or like other future horror movie commentaries or other John Carpenter movie commentaries we can do in the future. I know it's fun to do for us, and I applaud those of you who listen all the way to this point in the show where we just kind of ramble on until you guys check out. But
I will use almost any excuse to watch a John Carpenter movie.
There you go. Yes. Jim, where can people find more of your work?
HHWLOD.com is the family of podcasts that you are also a part of, Aaron. From all over the country, all over the geek spectrum, check it out. We have shows from many different geekly pursuits, the Walking Dead TV podcast, the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. podcast. We also have Long Box of Doom for comics, Real Heroes for movies, the Out Now with Aaron and Abe podcast, of course, that you're listening to now. Check it out there. And you can check out my blog, Retropolis, on the Taylor Network of Podcasts.com. It's a weekly. I write about things that are old because I am old.
Brandon?
My Twitter is twitter.com/btpeters. You can find read my blog, Naptown Nerd, naptownnerd.blogspot.com, as we've said. It's all Halloween right now. Nothing else. And you can read my Blu-ray reviews on whysoblue.com. And also on the HHWLOD podcast, there's the Ichapod Cranecast.
Yeah.
Where I'm on with Aaron here and Maxwell Haddad, and we discuss Sleepy Hollow. So, and we have a contest going for that right now. So listen to the episode to find out what that is.
I love that show.
And that's going to do it. Thank you guys for joining me to discuss Halloween in a commentary form.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
For sure. And until next time, so long and goodbye. That's a great, like, I like that, like, Michael hesitation, like, well, I guess I'll kill her now.
You know what? Yeah, I could kill her with the phone cord.
I'm curious what the rest of his plan would have been if she just sat there the whole night, like, just bitching at him.